such a windy rainy night. Always Pushing the Pull Door is a book of poems, but it's two books. The fourth section is poems written in response to walks by Tom DeLorme to commemorate Richard Harris. Obviously we all know who Richard Harris is. And the second section in the book, which is a second book, it's actually two books under one cover really, is a response to Frank Zappa's Yellow Shirt, as performed by the Ensign Modern. So I begin by reading a number of poems from the first section of the book, which is to commemorate Richard Harris. And I'd like to dedicate this reading to the memory of my father, who died just recently. So, I just want to say that. Now, I want to say another thing. Artists have a word called portrait, which is to portrait someone. I kind of want to work off Tom DeLorme's paintings, and it's a poem trait. And the poem trait is possibly, and I hopefully give some expression to the man Richard Harris in the trait of who he was in the poem. So the poem trait is related to the poet trait. Okay. Poem trait of Harris at the Bull McCabe. What have they done with the old gods? These new priests have no understanding of their own kin. They are not men of flesh, but of milk. What do they understand of the meaning of the dance? What do they know of fields, the meaning of land beneath which Orpheus sleeps to the weeping contrition of my dead mother? Who will waken them toward my promised body? Am I to stand idly by while a riot of greed runs amok without one seeing the shape of things to come? But look up in the glazed intent of your eye on cold sea. Do you not see clouds bearing signs of undoing? Eat your sandwich, bud. There is a footfall of one approaching, one whose blood must be spent. Without need, his life will be extinguished. But what has become of them, the old gods? I'm just going to throw these on the floor to get a lift. Portrait of Harris and State Time. Without moving for a second, the streets passed into night, turned into lost names where ghosts lived. Mary, Ajuri, I can't pronounce it in English next to I attempted to flee to where ghosts lived. It remained in my absence beyond my understanding, as inevitable as sun and rain alighting mimic streets. On names of streets unknown to me, I stood motionless, all color, virtue, and water, dreaming of flowing green valleys, pools of words of woods, mornings whose sea-misted garments kissed guilty polychromes, from which memory, with its geometry of horizons and window panes, appeared and disappeared, evergreen shadows of the poet and the painter I had left to the provisions of the chosen mountain time. On such as these streets, it occurred to me the apple had not fallen far from the tree, but had simply found a home where it had been placed. Cradle crypt of inevitable beginning toward inevitable end. Rain occluded from the parchment of the streets, I built a bridge from here to there. A darkness of lightning pierced my hands with the words, "Go before you are the rest." I set toward the beautiful city full of men and women of unmade histories, knowing the hour of my death no longer mattered, but how fully I lived the life I now possessed. There's been a lot of stuff in the papers about it's kind of ironic really, because there's poem in the book, Poem Thread of Harris as King Arthur, but there's been a lot in the papers about Tom Connolly portraying Harris as King Arthur in Bedford Rock. And there's been a lot of going to and from. And for me personally, I think it's really kind of silly, but however. Portrait of Harris as King Arthur. And the irony is that the poem was written before the statue went up, and it's written from a portrait of Bridget Harris playing King Arthur. So anyway, between this, that, then, now, here, there, things are formed, collide, are unformed, and formed anew. Yet, in the moment of this particular present, the shape and presence of this woman is the precious announcement of what is truly possible, a living truth, beyond all magic, all illusion. Even as around the corner of this day, the life of tired men in brown greatcoat, even as around the corner of this day, the life of tired men in brown greatcoats pace ever closer to the inevitable end of their stories of russet forests and green lanes the last hiding place of the last badger finally given up. The snow of skin remains luminous with the light of the afternoon sun. Within this moment, the overcrowded odor death has been retarded beneath the shade of an autumnal skyline, where we hide outside ourselves, reminiscing upward, beams in a posthumous poem, a future of windows in a silence of flickering shadows. And to end the first section of the book, I'll read this poem, one trait of Harris' poet. And Harris sang and wrote poems, and I read the poems and I heard the songs. I didn't know the man. But this is just a reflection of poetry itself, actually. Everybody who writes poetry, for everybody, but it's a point trait of Harris as poet. And it's in two voices. It went something like this, he said. Second voice. Somewhere the whore at the heart of the man screamed, "Let me down, let me down." Or we both will drown beneath a flood of biblical proportions, I assure you, please. The man stood unknown, strange, anonymous, in the center of a huge city, among a litter known as the poor. Suddenly, feeling the weight of being forsaken, pulled his ear. I do not fathom this predicament. I am neither weightless nor crushed. Yes, there will be songs for tomorrow. Yet this present silence is that which is most precious. Once again, the whore of the heart of the man screamed, "Let me down, let me down." Our night will take flight. We will end at the bottom of a ravine. Our bones will be broken and twisted. The man, beginning to realize something was amiss, broke a branch from a nearby tree, began to flay wildly at bush and flowers in Park Central. "You hurried too hastily," he panted. "In the heart, in the heat of the moment, be a window, wounded by time. And you will be it. All you will be is transparent." Finally, frustrated beyond belief, the whore of the heart of the man sobbed, "Please, don't do it, her pity, please, please." The man sat beneath a pool of cool leaves overhanging the city's river. His eye beheld the study of time as it arrived indifferently, and as indifferently passed by, yet was never gone. "I have nothing to say," he issued, as he stretched and yawned. That's about the sign of it. And to close the first section of the book, I'll read the epitaph. "Not to value the means and greatness of achievement, but rather the truth of its purpose. Knowing in all you see and come to know, the last whistle held was the first one to grow. The second section of the book, a story of a poem is a small town, the Yellow Shark Chronicle, volumes 1 and 2, is how would I explain it? I'm not very good at explaining why I do things. It's a story, and it involves a load of characters, and it is the story of a poem, but not of a poem. And the characters come from Frank Zappa, and from listening to the music of Frank Zappa as performed by the N7. Assembly, not here, Berlin, conducted by Frank Zappa. So the titles come from key pieces of work. But the titles of the poems are actually characters in themselves. So intro is not like introduction, intro is the name of a person. And intro is related to Retro at the end of the book, who is his twin sister, but you have to read the book to get all of this. I'm trying to give an insight into how all of this kind of happens. So once intro is an introduction, it's also a character. So it's a character speaking. It's not the title of a poem. And all of the people, or all of the titles of the poems, are actually characters. So intro. Fragment 1 of volume 1, dated 79, page 208. And you have to check out the other shots to get that. Intro. Understanding signs on the hands of applause. The necessity of a place for underpants. Sketches the secret word for tonight. On a lipstick circled cigarette, leaves it where it forms, opens a curtain on a backdrop of trees. Behind a small town, beneath a starry night, blossoming over time space. A balmy weather forms lazily down the wall to the dusty garage, from where cello sounds flow down Main Street before the girl in the magnesium dress lays her bow on a book to polish the silver silk of her socks, softly humming to a murder of lavender crows on her kitchen sink. Get with me. Gathers a string of darkness in a room of one light, calms an open wound of omen on the palm of her hand, making ready for the inevitability, slips into something real by which she was recognized. Yet sounding before. Uncle Meat attends to the sewer in his kitchen. A grace of stale bread satiates his hunger. A crackle of radio on the windowsill swells an ounce of honeycomb loneliness to trickle from his breath as he unties red and white suit tints from his boots. Dog breath prepares for a dawn rendezvous, not knowing the time of its arrival, congregates a group of one in a dispossessed bus shelter. Sundry shadows of past passengers linger between going, coming, gone, have an odd smell. He senses beneath an oily rain dripping from street lamps, yellow shaft, weaves an umbrella of memories from the molting hair of a dog named Scratch, reads from his daily rhyme its banner, patience has been stolen. 2 removes from the crime, he folds the paper neatly into a bowl, prepares a meal for Scratch, makes ready for another oncoming. Yesterday's Roots is sleeping. A drop tissue melts into her white pillow, a message with no return address. There is thunder and sunlight in her bed, a well of ashes, a well of water, a will towards silence, from which she watches olive trees grow retro. Having begun from the past of her future, returns to her beginnings, slips initial sands between a gentle thread of fingers, the beads of her blood form a warm handshake of glance, from which nothing, no one, is pushed, and so and the Yellow Shaft Chronicles, the story of a poem of small town is divided into 2 voices. Yellow Shaft is the character, and he records everything that's going on. So Yellow Shaft Chronicles. The beggar, Yellow Shaft, a global Indian, with a twist of bone in his hair, sat on the quiet corner of Valdez and Times Beach, a copper bowl of biblical proportions on his knees, a newspaper of historical proportions under his ass, cradled the dog he named Scratch, a one-eyed, three-legged canine fallen from poodle girls. From the multitude of no one, a man approached. Words in his head, flowing down the highway of his tongue. Yellow Shark heard the man speak of the demise of Yellow Shark, of the injustice of his own, of the lack of compassion and pity. Could anyone not have a little pity? And the dog, for God's sake, the dog. The man may have even used the word lump. The man's intrusion was bearable, just. Some time passed before the thunderous words of the man began to splinter into oblivion. When these sounds had sufficiently faded, Yellow Shark quietly took up his bow and left. I have seen the time of will undone. I have been witness to the making towards the nowhere noble. I have observed the assembled break in two. I have seen what I have seen. I remain on me of what to do. Yellow Shaft Chronicles, Fragment 2 of Volume 2, dated 85, page 37. It was a hard blow, I said. He gave no sign he registered my conviction, nor my belief in the unfortunate turn of his events. There's money in the tea caddy. Not a lot. But it will get you a drink or two, he said. I told him I hadn't come for that. He simply sighed. A long, heavy sigh of grey cloud. In all the years that I had known him, I had never seen him so removed, distracted. Even if he was not as he seemed, I knew this was not time to be comical. The lemons are coming on well, you see. The girl in the magnesium dress for my niece, who hasn't been sent by the birthday. No, this is so
good. I guess like a 9-year old who thinks the adults are talking about sex.
Yeah. It's a joke. The girl in the magnesium dress on quiet days hangs at the man smoking thin cigarillos, walking her talk, popping chewing gum pellets, the wide smile of her salutation. Stop, Ted! A rainbow of invitation, a burrow of heather and flax, a sea breeze over it, cool tequila. The girl in the magnesium dress is all style and substance, the technicolor prophecy of her dreams, the transparency of dumps above her head. The girl in the magnesium dress has a language for naming visions. Look, she will suddenly exclaim. The purple floor at Scottish Highlands, somewhere Irish living, over there, out there, beyond the New Jersey shoreline, the girl in the magnesium dress has a gift for playing the cello. On nights when people cannot hear the stars, she will translate their silence. Text messaging her nearest and dearest with cello sounds that hum like a soft rain on an Arab day. The girl in the magnesium dress has been which is out beyond all bounds. She has a figure shaping as birdsong, a heart of turquoise, a wit wild as water. Would you have a scent of Uncle Meat or a variation of dog breath? She laughs to the woman made mannequin, made assistant at the cosmetics counter. The girl in the magnesium dress is passion to walking in twilight rain, gathering scents of the days ending in bouquets of colored buttons, which she settles along the white lines of highways, reciting her poem, "You too may go there. You too may travel there," say I, the girl in the magnesium dress, out to the land from which you will gather your freedom into lunch harness. The girl in the magnesium dress lives in a garage on the edge of town, toward which a balmy weather slips quietly down its lawns. She sleeps with jazz music dreaming trees, wakes with the light of flowers at dawn. Okay, I'll finish it to Ruth is sleeping. Get with me. Maybe three. Maybe two. Ruth is sleeping, fragment 5 of volume 1, dated 81, page 64. Ruth is sleeping. The bracelets of her dreams have the strange scent of a compulsive music born of a wind of tents and deserts, the wanderings of her forebearers. Ruth is sleeping in the alchemist language of her river. She opens her mouth to issue her prayer of the ones. The language of her prayer is silence. The prayer of her silence is a river. The river is a sleep wherein she dreams. Ruth is sleeping. She is dreaming of the olive trees of Judea, of its rivers and fields, of its baskets of chimes men singing her name unnamed buns in the sand, unnamed bun in the sand is a basket with a chime, and the chime is the dream of the olive trees and of Judea. Deep in her sleep, she opens her eyes. Ruth is sleeping, searing through holocaust, through black smoke and incense. The bracelets of her dreams have the strange scent of a compulsive music, born of a wind of tents and deserts, the wanderings of her forebears. Yalcha Chronicles, 5,000,006, Volume 2, dated 86, page 190. Only night grows younger now, he said. At their table, I knew it was time to talk of real things. Only my breath would not stop drawing sand. I watched his eyes yawn of boredom, of tiredness, as she threw her napkin on the table. Oh, you and your hunger for the dead, she said. Of course, she did not fully understand what her words meant, nor what her gesture could entice. I confess, neither did I, but I knew. I knew a gun of sorts was being loaded while he held a bullet between tightened lips, yet said nothing. And to finish, Get Whitney. And again, Get Whitney is not like go and get Whitney, Get Whitney again. Get Whitney was a local whore, lived in a large, cool, blue room, had white chamois linen curtains hanging from French Bay windows overlooking Times Beach. Get Whitney played guitar Paco style, induced jazz tears from twilight skies, by midnight could sleaze a waste gin round the back door of any speakeasy, suspending the suspenders of her pilgrimage of sadness. Get Whitney had Dundee voice, flamingo fingers of southern hue, danced the Spanish Salome, grinding the blistering dreams of men into the thick soup of the real. Get Whitney read poems of colored sand, understanding the look of lost lungs in men's eyes, the obesity of its vengeance, the floundering ground of its lungs. Spoke to angels about the visions of loss and uncertainty. Get Whitney found a girl's hand on the railroad track, stranded between the flights of a mosquito pond, the shackles of an overspill of oil, took her home, bathed her clean, became mother. Get Whitney went missing when the child was 12, was found one morning, hanging from a gallows of possessiveness, a little knot round her ankles, like never thrown napkins at the bed.